finally. Welcome to another episode of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy. Hi, I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. In this episode, I will be talking to you about my additions to my Christmas, my Black Christmas carols, as well as recapping Star Trek Discovery and rehashing The Stand with my cousin Viva. This is going to be an interesting, kind of Christmassy, but not really Christmassy episode, and I hope you enjoy it, and thank you for listening.
And never brought to mind. Should old acquaintance be forgot, and old lang syne.
That is Leslie Odom Jr. singing Auld Lang Syne. When I started considering a concept for this podcast, I basically was tossing around how I was going to legally integrate all of my favorite Christmas songs that I've been secretly listening to basically since the beginning of the year almost, but definitely since October. On and off, I would sneak and I would listen to it and say, it's not the right time of year, but this has been such a crazy year, why not listen to it? That's how I have been. And I was able to find this artist who just released his Christmas song, his Christmas album just in like November or the beginning of December. And I found this out on CBS Morning News. My main source of news, as it is it were. I don't look at the news on the weekend, but I have started, I started this list on Amazon, because Amazon has a pretty robust music service that rivals Apple as well as Spotify and even Pandora. So why not try it out? Plus, it's easier for me to download shit and use it on my show using Amazon. Just saying. And the artist that we just listened to was Auld Lang Syne by Leslie Odom. Today, I was originally looking specifically for that. But then, I started adding other... it's like you get clicky and you just started adding shit. And that's what I was adding. I was listening to Leslie Odom singing the Christmas song. I prefer the Nat King Cole song. But then, how can you have a Christmas Black People Carol list that don't include Luther? Skinny Luther. Not Big Luther, but Skinny Luther. And here is Skinny Luther singing Have Yourself a Merry Christmas.
Faithful friends that are dear to us, gather near to us once more.
And some of these songs is just crazy because it cracks me up, because I remember my grandfather who used to stutter. One of his favorite Christmas songs was Nat King Cole, Chestnuts Over the Open Fire. That was hysterical. But I also added this one, and I think Luther sang this the best. Oh Come All Ye Faithful. Y'all check this out. And this little Luther hitting these notes and giving a little wobble at the end, though.
Oh, come, all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. Oh, come, ye all.
Luther Vandross, just like Whitney Houston, were taken away from us too early. And it makes me sad listening to, I think everyone has an incident or a situation where they're able, where they hear a certain Luther song or a certain Whitney Houston song. And I'm sure that there are so many people that have produced their kids are a direct result of their parents getting together based on a Luther Vandross or Smokey Robinson song. I'm just saying. And also, while I was listening to Luther's music in his traditional Christmas album, it also allowed me to discover other songs like My Favorite Things. How cool is this song? And why haven't I been listening to it all of the rotation since October?
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on
can't sing like Luther, but I do thoroughly enjoy that song. And then I mentioned Babies Being Made by great singers, and Smokey Robinson basically gave a kind of jacked up, wishing somebody a jacked up Chanukah. He didn't know what that was, but he completely mispronounced it, but it was completely hysterical. But this is also Smokey Robinson and Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. How cool is this, y'all?
I just came back from a lovely trip along the Milky Way. I stopped off in the North Pole to spend the holiday. I called on the old Santa Claus to see what I could see. He took me to his workshop and took this plan to me. So you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pop, I'm telling you why.
That may be an older Smokey, but I think it's completely hysterical, and I had to add that to my list. And I'm going to see what Smokey does with White Christmas, because I really did not feel like hearing the Bing Crosby song version of this, but I think you will get a kick out of this just as much as I do. Oh, this is kind of funky. To my playlist, and then he does his Smokey rendition of Oh Holy Night with featuring Take Six, but I'm not sure if I'm gonna be able to add this one though, y'all. By the by, Take Six is a harmonizing group from the 90s. Go look them up, but this is what they do. And no, it ain't Boys to Men.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth.
I just had a basically pop or a visualization of Smokey Robinson with the Miracles, and this rendition with Take Six basically takes me there. Oh, you ain't Slick Smokey, you just all that in a bag of chips. And this is how I'm going to end this section of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy, the Christmas, Black Christmas Carol list. And how can you not have a little bit of Mahalia Jackson on your playlist? And this is more traditional in the African American community. Here is Mahalia Jackson and Go Tell It on the Mountain.
Security encryption gamma. After 6 months, mother, the emperor has returned to discovery a changed woman, uncertain, embarrassing, weaker than ever, cowering behind her pompous new imperial flagship. Even those who once supported her can no longer deny that her time has passed. She spared a Kelpian's life publicly. What is the point of crushing a slave rebellion if none other than the Emperor herself shows mercy to slaves? And if our enemies heard of this? Obviously, that cannot be permitted. Mother taught me better than that, back when she had a spine. I'll have to accelerate my timetable. She's left me no other choice. Not that I mind. The sooner she's gone, the better.
When I started this podcast or this channel of my overall Tennessee Fro is Reading podcast, I decided that I wanted to, I really wanted to focus on everything nerdy, from video games to definitely with the focus in a, of Star Trek and the different series. I was very happy to go and rehash and revisit everything Star Trek Picard, because he had not done any movies for a number of years, almost like 10 or 15 years. When the Star Trek Discovery series started, I was impressed because of the diversity of the cast, as well as the diversity and having the lead character Michael Burnham, Sonequa Green, having a leading role and a commanding role at that. Usually in Star Trek, they get killed off very rapidly. However, her character only has grown in stature. She's had some setbacks, fell in love with a traitorous Klingon. We have come full circle. What you heard in the previous episode, or the previous segment, was Michael Burnham's personal log. That's the other thing. Star Trek universe is basically online. There's a StarTrek.com that actually has, it's like the Wikipedia encyclopedia of Star Trek. That in itself, I find amazing. Collections of everything, every universe, all the United Federation of Planets, a lot of that has their own wiki or their own section, 600,000 and growing, different contributions to that website. There's also Star Trek Online, the game online, that is built upon and uses information from the Star Trek Online, the wikis. So what has also grown about that is how they have utilized and expanded in the social media universe. They basically have the ships of Star Trek, their Star Trek logs, as well as the whole Star Trek Discovery, which I think is managed by CBS, that particular feed on Instagram. Every week after the post show, the characters post audio clip online. And this week's no exception with the log that was posted by Michael Burnham. That's the cool thing. The actors and actresses post as their character. This one was so chilling because she basically posted as the mirror Michael Burnham. How crazy is this? And it got me a little shaky. She was basically going off on the Philippa Gregory character, how she came back from the real principal universe week, and etc. And I think it sets us up perfectly for this week's episode of Star Trek Discovery. It's moving. It has a lot of kick butt scenes in it, treachery, all of that. It is absolutely probably one of, after all the twists and turns and holdbacks, etc., of this past year, this is the one that I actually think is probably one of the best Star Trek discoveries of this season. It is the beauty of all of the special effects, the costuming, and the fighting. Loved it all. It's a little murder, suicide-y, kind of stabby, but it's actually what you come to expect in this particular franchise. And I think out of all of the episodes, they did a really good job with this one. So without any further ado, Star Trek Discovery, I believe this is episode, I'm going to have to go back, y'all, girl. Let's see. That's when you know you're getting old. You trying to keep up with which episode is where and blah, blah, blah. This is Star Trek Discovery. We are progressed. Let's see. I'm going to have to go back. Because put my glasses on to get, yes, this is episode 10, Terra Firma Part 2. There's a lot of twists and turns, and we have to say goodbye to an old friend, but not all that old. She actually is pretty kick butt. We absolutely have to say goodbye to Philippa Giorgio. She dies again in this particular episode. So, without any further ado, Star Trek Discovery, Terra Firma Part 2, The Great Goodbye. So you know something is up when they basically start the episode and you watch or you read the listings. And I just realized after rewatching it again, Michelle Yeoh is listed as a special guest star when she had been listed previously as a cast member. I think they knew a lot about the ending or the break of her character even prior to this episode being released, and with her now confirmed involvement with Shang-Chi, the Asian-led cast of Marvel's new movie, Shang-Chi, that's supposed to be released next week. They actually just wrapped production on that in October of 2020. It's going to be released the summer of next year. If you read my blog post from last week, you will notice that why wait so long to confirm all of the characters, including her character, Michelle Yeoh, of Captain Giorgio? She actually is going to be involved in so many different things. I actually follow her on Instagram, and I loved her post as far as Star Trek logs, and just her excitement when they basically confirm her involvement in that particular work. And also, her costumes in the last couple of episodes, especially in this episode, it does make sense. And I think if that's what I was saying last week was a prologue to how badass she's going to be in Shang-Chi. I'm all over it. I'm not a particular comics or Marvel fan beyond Black Panther, but I will beat down every door, especially if they release that bitch in IMAX. I'm over there. I'm going to be in probably a full hazmat suit, but I would love to watch that in the theater. So that's where I'm going to end it, because that plays a lot into what happens to her character on this episode, and it should have given me some signal because they listed her as a special guest star in the credits. This episode in itself was just particularly violent, I thought. However, I do and truly do appreciate just the special effects. We go back to the Terran verse of it all, and one of the photos in my blog post basically tells that story. There is an alternate of everyone, even Saru, in the Terran universe. We take up because we know that Lorca, who was formerly of the original Discovery captain, he took over, I believe, after Giorgio, the original Giorgio died. So, but in the Mirror Universe, he leads a rebellion against the Terran, Georgium. Tilly is so treacherous. I love her poofy hair. She's just so, chattery and just kind of flighty in the principal universe. But as Tilly, the Terran interrogator, she's pretty badass. Also, they use Terran. She wants to basically bring change to the Terran universe, but she is basically stuck on those tactics of torture to break the soul. But she could not have been more wrong, because the Michael Burnham character is just biding her time. She basically is not only a figment, but the creative output of the jacked up Giorgio. We see multiple scenes where they try to break her down, and they use her to basically get what they initially thought to get back, or to basically the traitors within the ranks, and perform some type of coup to get the new and improved Giorgio out. But all it results in is Giorgio having to kill Mira Michael Burnham again, and it leads to one of the coolest fight scenes of this season. And I basically realize that I just need more of that type of fighting to go on. It is just so amazing how well and how different and how well designed that whole episode was, to the point where I actually recorded it. And I basically posted my YouTube, that particular recorded YouTube video, to the blog notes. So if you navigate to the WordPress link, you will actually come up on that particular part of the episode. It's a short clip, but it does bespeak to everything that... how well produced this particular episode was. I particularly like the storyline because it basically signifies just complications of characters just in real life. But as you could have guessed from the title of this particular episode, the Filippa Giorgio character was basically being pulled apart in the principal universe. She was given the option to go to another planet to basically find her way back to herself and to survive. But that's not, it wasn't capable. She ended up killing Mira Michael Burnham. And she can't exist in the principal universe. So the character of Forever, the gatekeeper of Forever, basically tells her and gives her, shows her the gateway of where she actually belongs, which I find interesting. It not only speaks to time travel, which there was a whole war against that. It also bespeaks to the opportunity that... this character, the Filippa Giorgio character, is going to either show up in some other iteration of Star Trek, like all the characters in the fight scene and this particular episode have done previously. But it also bespeaks to how she's going to probably be able to be brought back after she finishes her other projects, because as I mentioned, Michelle Yeoh actually has a huge part in the net upcoming Marvel movie Shang-Chi, but I can also foresee her also participating in other Marvel movies as well as other iterations of Star Trek, because they brought her back. She was in the like season one, and then when she came back after she'd gotten killed because of Michael Burnham's nonsense at the ending of season one, she comes back as the Terran Giorgio as in Section 31. So I don't think we've seen the last of Michelle Yeoh's character or the Filippa Giorgio of it all. And I wish they would offer this type of well-developed character and the scenes and the sets and everything that I've talked about in this particular series, in this particular episode, because this is the 10th episode of so many that they've ordered up, and this was probably one of the best produced ones. Great storyline, great ending, didn't seem rushed. I like how they filtered in the Booker character. He used the Emerald Chain's own technology to be able to figure out where this signal was, because that's what actually brought them to this particular part of the sector anyways. They were researching Saru's people's a distress signal that had been sent like 100 years ago. So they actually have now started to integrate him, his character, in to the storyline of Star Trek. And I can only foresee bigger things between him, the Blues character, that's the prodigy, non-binary trill host that she's actually... they are actually playing a bigger part in the episode it just was amazing how they were able to use a lot of this talent without rushing the storyline, and gave me the action and special effects that I actually have come to expect and enjoy in the Star Trek episode. This is probably one of the best episodes that you can actually watch. If you like that clip, the YouTube clip that I actually embedded within the blog post, I'm hopeful that it'll actually encourage you to actually just either watch this entire season, but definitely watch episode 10, because again, it was very, very well done. So my cousin Viva and I decided to start making commentary on Stephen King's books over the years. We are both avid Stephen King stans, read everything, Salem's Lot, Firestarter, The Shining, Christine, Cujo. But we were both pretty much excited, even though as I get older, I don't really like watching horror movies by myself, but I was actually pretty excited because I saw the remake, and there is a remake, 1994 edition, with Molly Ringwald and a great cast. They decided to update it, and even in this time of plague, they decided to go ahead, CBS Access, All Access, released The Stand on this past Friday, or Thursday it dropped. I was hesitant to watch it. I made sure that I didn't watch any of the reviews at all. But what the purpose and the totality of it escapes me, and you will see I am not alone in my opinion. Again, I have read no online chatter, have looked at any of the posts on social media, and this is just an opportunity for myself and my cousin Viva to vibe. As the nonsense that it is, The Stand, a remake of the classic Stephen King 1,000-page novel, and here we go. And this is my cousin Viva, my cool, classy cousin from Brooklyn, New York. And here we go. The Stand. How much we can't stand it. Or at least I know I can. On this computer. Hello.
Hi.
Microphone check. 1, 2, 1, 2. And we are recording. I know this is actually happening because it's up in my left-hand corner.
Mm-hmm. That's what she said last time too.
Well, see, what had happened was I didn't know you have to continue to subscribe, or it basically got and it just deleted everything.
I bet you they still got a copy.
I was trying to find that because I thought about the same thing. I'm getting more and more paranoid in my old age. So I have a whole conspiracy theory. So this is, hold on for one quick second, because my heat, the HVAC system is basically single, like a unit. I'm not connected to a furnace or anything. So I have like a singular unit in each room of my apartment. So, and it's really loud. I had to cut it on because it was kind of cold earlier. It still was real cold in here for a few minutes. So I just have to cut it on for a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. It heats up the joint and I'm all good. So, but it is loud and I can't handle it on while I'm recording. So this is a part of the podcast where we're going to fuss a whole bunch about The Stand. So as I put, I did post to my blog earlier and I made a comment that it's me and you basically vibing out to the Stand. We both read it years ago. I read it about maybe 20, 30 years ago. Then we reread it in anticipation of this, the movie that dropped on CBS All Access. So it's just me, my, and my cool cousin from Brooklyn, Viva. Say hey to everybody, Viva.
Hey, everybody.
Where are you? Tell the listening audience, where are you in the whole COVID of it all?
Well, currently I am working remotely from Virginia Beach, where you are also from, even though you don't be trying to claim us.
I kind of tell people, you know how where that comes from. I tell people wherever my truck is parked, that's where I'm from, that particular time period. But I do, I recently basically have talked, I've told people, oh, I'm from Virginia. So I at least tell people I'm from Virginia. I mean, for real, I most people know I'm from Virginia, at least the people that I work with currently, they all know that I'm kind of a swashbuckler from Virginia. They knew I was in North Carolina for a minute. They knew I was ex-military, but I haven't really gotten to the specifics of it all.
Well, I will tell.
Well, everybody know now because I got a whole 30 people that subscribe to my podcast. So there you go.
Well, y'all don't say nothing.
You have no sense, but it's all good though. So let's just dive right in because I know you, we don't want to wake up Mary, and we, and I know you got a life. I ain't got none, so I could talk to you all night. And it also did not help that I rewatched it, and I think I was madder the second time versus the first time, because not only did I rewatch it, I started rereading the book again, and 60, 65 pages in, I'm still looking at the screen and saying, what is this? That is how we're, that's, let's just start there. I went from default to what is this? Go. Right.
No, so what specifically, like I said, it was for me, it was even the how it started in the beginning. Like, first of all, starting that boulder threw me off because one of the things that I really enjoy about the post-apocalyptic style of any is like how at the beginning and like seeing people like realize it and then people like transitioning from, you know, being victims to, you know, getting stronger and learning how to do shit for themselves and all that. And so I kind of feel like I was missed out because we didn't get those transitions. Like we just get back and forth to before and then now during, you know?
Yep. So Viva, wait a minute. Did you drop, did it drop you off? Hold on for a minute, Garrett.
Okay. Wait, let me check my phone.
It has you. I can still hear you.
You know what?
Did you hang up from Zoom?
No, you know what? I never hung up from our, let me,
wait, hold on for a minute. I'm gonna send you, oh yeah, okay. So I'm going, it's recording, but I, cause I keep seeing it just said one participant. And I'm like, well, where'd she go? So I'm going to go ahead, hang up, and just click on the join meeting again.
Okay, so I'm going to hang up too.
Yeah, hang up on messages or the phone. And I'm going to have to get you back in for some reason. Let's see, admit.
Okay, what about now?
Now I can see you. Ooh. In the Zoom now. Oh, that is hysterical. So I just sitting here just talking away, recording.
We almost did it again.
I'm gonna basically delete all of the first part and we're gonna go back to Viva. Actually, we've had some technical difficulties. Viva has been able to join Zoom again. Say hey, Viva, to everybody.
Hey, Viva, to everybody again.
And you overheard me talking about the one-sided conversation about how I reread and we watched The Stand, and Viva basically, before she had to transition over, and I properly admitted her to my Zoom meeting, she actually now is going to basically go into a little bit more details about why I hate it. And I'm so sorry. This is straight up spoilers, y'all. It is, and I can truly say, my low expectation about how good this was going to be, completely, it was below my expectations, because they didn't need to remake this. 60 pages into rereading the book, rewatching it again, it just made me more angry the second time and third time around. And where Viva had dropped off is how she was annoyed, and completely so, how she was annoyed, how they flipped around some of the characters. And you were basically talking about, before we had to disconnect and had to get you reconnected, you were talking about the whole Harold of it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like,
because I got some more to talk about old non-fat Harold.
Yeah, I was just like, not to be, I don't want to, hopefully I won't offend any of your your listeners, but I'm just like, is this the Republican version? Because I really do feel like they kind of went out of their way to kind of present Harold as like a victim to kind of justify some of the things, you know. And as you said, this whole thing is spoilers, because we might reference things like from like throughout the whole story, because we're comparing the two. So just a heads up there.
Let's start with all of the characters that they presented. Let's just start right there.
Okay.
For example, we've talked about this before offline, about how we wondered how Stephen King's racist tendency as a cisgender white dude from Maine, how he was going to flip and take out some of his obvious, and to me, obvious racist connotations. How the Larry Underwood was going to be represented in that Negro music, because his racist mama, the character in the book, Mama, was basically saying it sounds like that Negro music, but she said a little bit more offensive than that.
I don't remember if she said like, if she said like the ER, I don't know if she went there.
Exactly. She did.
But then, like I said, I will make concessions for the time, because when was it written? And like the original was written, what, in like maybe early 80s or late 70s? Well, no.
I think, hold on for a minute. I've got, this is like the Bible. This book is as thick as the Bible. But let me go to the copyright page. This, number one, it is wild just how much, how prolific Stephen King is. But the original copyright was in 1978.
Okay,
yeah. Released it in 1990. That was right in time for when he did the screenplay for the original 1994 one.
Right. So I will say this, right? Contextually, as far as like the times, he was, I guess you could consider it progressive, being that he did have like a lead character in Mother Abigail that was Black. Now, granted, it was like stereotypical, like respectable Negro type of, you know, Southern woman. But I guess probably for that time, that was probably pretty, you know, progressive.
Progressive and risky.
For 78. For 78. Mm-hmm. So I would give him that.
Because we were just on the right side of the civil rights movement. And out of all the people in the original book, she is the only one, except for her already being in fucking Boulder. She was the only one that was originally is in keeping with the original book. So I was cool with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about the expansion of Whoopi Goldberg's character. So, and
we'll see. Cause she just made an appearance in the first one. So we'll see like how close to the original character they kind of kept her. Because I guess like some of it, I don't know how dated they're gonna make it, but remember like with Mother Abigail. She was like the first, Negro to sing and at the like talent show or something. Remember, it was just like her family was very much like a lot of like first. Remember her. I think her father owned like a whole bunch of land, and at that time it was pretty, you know.
So they were like Negro rich. So this exactly it. We're gonna see the details of the book. They did not, and that's what I said the last time that wasn't recorded. That book was written in such detail, over 1,200 pages. Why did they have to add and change all this crap around? That's good to know. But you do bring up a good point. How are they going to weave in the richness of Mother Abigail's backstory to progress the Hollywood movie of it all? How are they going to have to cut all of it out, or she's just going to be like some voodoo specter? How are they going to make her role as rich as it was in the book? So the verdict is still out on that, but at least her appearance didn't tick me off.
Not yet.
So that's number one. Franny, I was reading today and I didn't remember this. She was already pregnant when when she was opened up in the book, she was already knocked up by a trifling boyfriend. But they made it so in the movie that Stu Redman was the daddy. Did you pick that up?
Yeah, that was the implication. But also, I mean, we'll get more information, but I feel like they probably employed that implied that. But then also, I'm wondering if that was the intention of her, like the overdose, to make it seem like, okay, if she was to imply that she wasn't pregnant, like prior to like confirm that that is Stu's baby in the movie, even though it wasn't in the book. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, okay, if she was pregnant, I guess they're saying like, oh, well, she wouldn't be, because she probably would have. I don't know. I'm just trying to justify that scene, because to me, it really like took away from the strength of the character. And in my mind, as far as like what they had painted her to be, or what Stephen King had painted her to be in the book.
And I think it's because I felt that they picked up the story of the plague at the wrong place. Basically, they were trying to see that they had progressed like days or weeks into the contagion, and then they were going to give us all of this backstory as flashbacks, but it didn't make any sense. None of it made any sense to me. And that was the letdown. If you're going to start the story in the middle, you're going to have to make some of these it's going to have to make sense, because then the flashbacks are going to need to make sense. The biggest part of the story when Franny was introduced was when she was out in the garden, her dad in the garden. He wasn't sick by the time she was she told him that she was knocked up. He wasn't already sick.
And not only that, not to bring it back to Harold, but because they kept doing it, they had him in so many scenes that were not even about him, you know? So remember, they had him like peeping through the fence hole, like at Franny while she was talking to her dad.
It's just that? Like, I mean, I know Harold Lauder is Amy Lauder's brother, weird brother, but where it, that is nowhere in the book.
Well, I think that's the purpose of that. Yeah, no, that's brand new. And then that's when the bullies came and like beat him up or whatever. So I feel like that was supposed to inspire like sympathy for him, which I don't like. I don't like it. Like, I definitely feel like this viewpoint is from like
the perspective of the troll that lives in his daddy's basement or mama's basement.
Yeah.
And this is his time to shine. That is, but also, again, let's talk about Harold.
Mm-hmm.
Remind me, give me the rundown of what you remember of Harold Lauder in the real Harold Lauder, fat chick, fat boy, yeah. Harold Lauder.
So I feel like it was a more balanced view of him, because he was like kind of creepy, like kind of a know-it-all, but also he was very, very smart. And then they were saying that even like had he had the right environment, or like probably if he had had a chance to go to college, that probably would have been his moment, like when he would have like matured and shined and kind of been more normal. But because he was kind of in this place where he had this super great intelligence, but then his social skills were lacking. And I feel like, you know, we probably have met people autistic. Like that.
Because he was autistic.
I don't think he was autistic. I think he was just, I think it's like kind of when you're in the place of, and I feel like you can relate to like being like, you know, so, you know, maybe above average intelligent, but then kind of being in that. So like people, it's like people kind of see you as not like a weirdo, but like not like.
Well, shit, girl, you see me as a weirdo now. What you talking about?
but then I think like with Harold, he had kind of, as a child, he kind of developed this like defense mechanism that is just like, oh, well, I'll just be like a know-it-all snot or I won't care, that type of thing. And I feel like in the book, when Harold and Franny, it's like Franny saw Harold initially. He didn't come looking. Oh no, he had come looking. Remember, she saw him. He was mowing the grass like all crazy. He had on like his bathing suit and he was barefoot. And he actually did miss his family. And he was crying and he was saying that he didn't think that he would, but that he did, you know? And so I feel like there was some actual humanizing moments for Harold in the book. Whereas I feel like this is kind of making him more, I don't know, just like kind of school shooter type, which I think they kind of even said, like the boys said that, like when they were beating him up or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going with this angle, but I'm not caring for at the moment.
Yeah, it just basically reminded, and you brought up this point too, about the Republican version of this, because mm-hmm. it reminded me of every freaking Trumplican that you know troll of the universe, because they're bad actors or actresses now, because 54% of fools voted for his ass. And why are they given so much credence to this creep when he mm-hmm. didn't have such a big role in the original book?
Or it's his role that was like, it wasn't definitely not as that on. It's just like clearly later on, it's just like he influenced, you know, he had big influence, but I feel like it was a buildup as to them, like the large impact his character would have. So I feel like they're just giving stuff away unnecessarily, because I feel like that was one of the best parts. It's just like, oh wow, if I had started reading the book, I wouldn't have been able to see that coming, you know? So I feel like it takes away some of the buildup, really.
And maybe it's because they know they have to basically wrap up a 1,200-page book in 10 episodes. Is limited series. Didn't you tell me it was 10 episodes? It's only 10?
Yeah. But the USA one, actually, I thought was pretty good. And they did it in 4 2-hours with commercial episodes. So, I mean, it's been done in an okay way.
But why did... And again, it's like, we'll never actually know. And I'm not looking forward to why they thought that they had to. How did you chop up a story this much and for progress and not utilize the original details of the book? And one of the big no-nos, or just what the hell were y'all thinking, was this Harold character and his prominence in at least the first episode. And then it leads into the whole creepiness of it all, because we talked about Harold, we talked about Franny. Stu mm-hmm. Redman, the mm-hmm. hell was that? And I reread it today. He hated Dininger. He hated the doctor. But now he's boys, and like Dininger was like a post-apocalyptic Dr. Fauci. What? Really? He hated him. He absolutely mm-hmm. hated him. And I think making him so young, but curmudgeonly, it was stupid. It didn't make any sense. That made no sense. Mm. Their relationship made no sense to me.
Yeah, I thought it was a little like, I guess, I think that was to appeal to the, you don't know, to make him like more hero-like, you know, like make or more stereotypical hero.
I don't know.
Yes, I don't know, girl.
And then the anti-hero foot in the door and making the black dude can't be in black. How are you gonna change the race and change the age of the characters and not make it consistent with the original story, because I think it loses something. And also you're going to offend a whole other group of people because of where we are in the social construct of it all. Not everybody is going to be real happy about you changing Campion to white to black.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't think that there was even, I'm just like, they must not think that like people of color are going to watch this, because I feel like it definitely has a very white gaze.
Do you ever feel that maybe you, if you're too woke or not woke enough, and am I being just too overly sensitive?
No, I mean, I feel like that's something as a Black person, especially as a Black woman in America, that's something that we deal with like in every single aspect of life. So, I mean, it's something to consider, but also I do feel like I'm fairly balanced on that. Like even, I was like, I even have some empathy for these trumpets out here, because I feel like there, it's kind of like, I think of people that are super, I'll say like super, super religious, but I feel like a lot of times they're being taken advantage of because people are looking for something to believe in. And so there are some people that manipulate that vulnerability. So they'll be like, oh, well, I'll use this racism to get your money and your adoration. So in some ways I do have empathy for those folks, because I mean, I do feel like they're getting fucked over, but it's not by us. It's not by the minorities and the women. It's by like those people that you're giving your money to. So, you know, like I said, I have limited empathy for that. So with that being said, I do feel like I have the ability to look at things balanced. And I will say with this, I mean, granted, it's just the first episode, that it does seem to have a white gaze, because I feel like even with them making Campion Black, it seems like, well, what character can we kind of afford to change the race of that's not going to like make some people feel some type of way? You know what I'm saying? Because like even when they're making Larry Underwood Black, in a way it kind of makes sense, because then they get to take out that Negro music thing, but it's still, he still was kind of like the closest to like a Negro that was the main character.
Yeah, but why does the Black man have to be the sacrificial lamb though? Didn't your mom say that? Why does he?
Well, she said why they had the Black man being the contagion.
He was patient zero instead of the white lawyer in New York. He was patient zero. So if I could just get past that, if they had just kept Campion Opie white dude, that would have made me happy. But then I was looking at who they were considering for the Franny character, and I didn't get as far as I wanted to, who they were also considering for the Stu character. There would have been other older actors that could have played that part. I just felt that if you're going to deviate that much from the story, you're going to do a better job of explaining it, because I didn't realize like what you had said about which character can they change up that is okay to change up without making such an impact, that will allow you to remove some of the more racist undertone and underpledgings of the original book, because the whole Larry Underwood, his mama said that Negro music, that's one of those things that by changing the race, you can basically delete that because it adds nothing to the story, her saying off on him. However, the way that they are starting in the middle of the story, we're not even going to hear that discussion though.
Well, who knows? Because the thing is that the only reason that we know that Larry Underwood is played by a Black character is because, you know, we looked at the cast. So we didn't meet him in this one. So who knows how they're going to intro him to us.
For all we know, he's going to be a country music star. And
Darius Rucker.
Like Viola Davis. And she's going to see why you singing that white music. Now that would be funny as hell.
They're not going to do that, girl. Well, you know what? Let me shut up. I don't know what they're going to do.
But they could take it there, though, because that would be funny to me, you know, because there is a mixed guy that's right in Nashville now, and I can't remember his name. Young guy. just recently got married, and I can't. Oh, what's his name from Darius?
Yeah, Darius Rucker.
Darius Rucker. He could have did that. How cool and how funny would have that been? You know, country music, and we basically started or assisted as Black people, and people think of it as white, but it's not. It's part of our musical heritage too. So for them to say something like that, Negro music, that is hilarious to me. Mm-hmm. All music is us. So that Harold Redd, Dininger, that relationship, and I did make a comment on Harold popping off, but I had forgotten just how smart the fat Harold was in the book, because I was mad at why this greasy haired troll was popping off about how highly contagious and mutating this virus was, and they said it was going to be almost impossible for you to make a vaccine for it because it mutates. And then I watched the news today about how Britain is going in tier 4 lockdown because they discovered a mutated form of Rona. So if you're going to watch, I'm saying all that to say, if you can watch this, you may want to basically block a whole bunch of BBC and news agencies, because it's going to freak you out. It's really going to freak you out watching this. But what else did I mention? I'm looking at my notes right now. And of course, I'll have my bifocals on. I'm going to have to put, Nick Anders, where is he?
They didn't introduce him yet.
Because he was in the first 60 pages.
Yeah, they didn't.
I feel like
a lot of the main characters, that's what I'm saying, is just like, even at the beginning, we really only met Stu, Franny, and Harold, right?
And Doctor, he dies, but yeah.
Well, I'd say, at some point, just about everybody.
And Mother Abigail, we only met half, and the foot in the door, the devil. We only met not even most of the cast members.
Right. So then that's why I feel like usually there is an intro to the people that are going to be like main characters within the story. And you know, also that's another thing that I liked about the USA version, because they did make some main characters like how they made the judge Black, you know, because that was so cool that Ruby Dee was Mother Abigail, and then Ozzie Davis was the judge that like Stu and Franny and Harold had met. And I think Stu met him first, maybe. Oh, no, that was Glenn I'm thinking of. But like the judge, like he was in the book, he was assumingly white, but it's just like, it didn't make a difference. It's not like they made any reference to him being Black. It just was like nice to see representation among humanity in the story, where there it doesn't have to be about him being Black, you know. So I thought that was really dope in the USA one. So like, we'll see if they, you know, I feel like they could have made any of the characters Black.
And why would,
or different, or Latino, or Asian, or, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it would be cool to see them mix it up a little and make it not so homogenous.
I'm thinking of Franny as an Asian woman, because I've been watching Star Trek Discovery, and they basically wrote her off of the show because she's doing the Shang-Chi movie, which is the first Marvel movie with an all-Asian cast. Michelle Yeoh, and I could see that. I could really see the character being Asian, or even the Mother Abigail being Asian.
Yeah, because then that would be like counter that stereotype of like Black woman is everybody's mother. But can I say this, like, to kind of further what you're saying about Franny being Asian? I think that would have been dope, especially like considering the family dynamic and like her getting pregnant. And also, just to be clear, I don't think that Jesse was kind of like a F-boy. I think it was just that he was kind of weak, a little bit of a poser. And I think that he had asked her like, oh, do you want to get married or whatever? And she was like, no, like she didn't want to marry him. Like she was, you know what I'm saying? Like she wanted, she was more, that's what I'm saying. She was kind of like independent. She was like independent, kind of a smart ass, like, you know what I mean?
And because her like parents were older, I mean, her brother had died, mm-hmm. got hit by drunk driver. Girl, just reread this shit today. And the way they portray her as this syrupy, waiting on the government, the Stepford wife, it was mm-hmm. a slap in the face to strong women. It just that, mm-hmm. and it just pissed me off. I got some sleep and then I rewatched it again and it made me even madder because I got to think of this mm-hmm. shit again.
But I feel like if I look at it from a different type of gaze, then it is interesting, like what they feel like is gonna appeal to. It's just like I realized that definitely this is, I don't think that they think they're appealing to a diverse audience. It seems like from the way that it's being, the story's being played out. I don't know who they think the audience is, but I don't think they think it's a diverse one.
Well, did they just not have us in the focus group? And how rude is
that? It doesn't appear so. Because even, like, don't get me wrong, like, I love Whoopi, but I mean, so do white folks too. So that's like a safe Negro, well known to have on your, sorry, not Whoopi, I'm not calling you like a Negro, but you know.
Why can't the storyline represent everybody that would read his books and that would read and would watch a story like that? Why wouldn't they have non-binary characters, trans characters,
that would have been Asian so dope. Characters,
and to be in on the conversation, and women that look like us. You know, I'm getting ready to turn 50 next year, but I started one of my first novels besides Roots was Firestarter. Why wouldn't you think I wouldn't want to see this or I wouldn't want to read this and you were writing for me instead of being selfish and just writing for your own damn self?
Well, you know what? I wonder how much we talk about that, like with other people outside of the groups that like the same things that we like. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like maybe they truly don't know that there is a more diverse audience for these stories. Like, and
all those all those podcasts that I found online with Black people and the nerdy Black girls, we all read your shit. And you mean to tell me you didn't think that your showrunner?
But the thing is that who's funding it? Who's funding the shit, sweetie? You know what I'm saying? It ain't just about who liked it. It's about who's willing to pay for it. So,
but look at the fucking algorithms. You need a nerd like Harold looking at them damn algorithms. After, you know, I looked at this last episode of Star Trek Discovery and I followed it up with The Stand. I'm like, y'all mean y'all don't talk because that is more representative. Fantasy is more representative of this shit that you wrote in 78. But you mean to tell me nobody thought to look at the same algorithm the people in Star Trek would, because I'm going to go back to my other conspiracy theory. He wants, basically, he wants to prove that you cannot remake his shit. That is the bottom line. Stephen King ain't slick. His paranoid closed head injury ass is not slick. You want to make, because I think he's still pissed off that the 1994 version was a close approximation of what the book was. Even though I haven't seen it.
But the thing is, he's one of the producers. For the next
time we talk though. But so he wanted to basically rewrite and blow it up to prove in his little Republican-esque mind that he that you cannot remake his stuff.
Okay, I will just say, believe me, I'm not caping for Stephen King, but I don't think he's not like pure Republican. I feel like he's more like liberal white, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I think he's a libertarian and he hates both of them. Yeah.
I don't, because like, remember at the beginning, remember so long ago in 2017, I believe Stephen King was like on Donald Trump's block list. I know he was like real famous for like trolling Stephen King, but it's just like, even there's like intersectionality in that, right? Because like, so was J.K. Rowling before then. She started going in on trans people, you know, so it's just like everybody kind of has their lines of like what they're, you know, progressive about. But I the thing is, I don't think that he would want to sabotage this because he's one of the producers. So it's like, if it tanks, he's losing money too. So I don't think he's purposely. But
for someone that got all the money, and I'm looking at, again, I'm looking at just all of his creative output and how much I have not read since a certain point. The Dark Tower series, have not read anything after the Dark Tower series, but he's written a whole bunch of shit as Richard Bachman. He's written a whole bunch of novellas. He's written some nonfiction. I had no idea. And screenplays.
Now, screenplays, I will say that Sleepwalkers, that shit hit. Like, that was a good movie, but I think it was written as to be a movie. So, I mean, I don't know how much of, like, I wonder, did he even see it? Did they just like, oh, we'll give you this much money to put your name on it? Like, I wonder if he even saw it.
But what I also found out when I was watching or listening to when I was taking it out, I only go out like one time a week. So I took my bottles to the recycling bin in Red Bank. And I say that to say this is because the city of Chattanooga does not allow you to put glass in the blue recycling bins. Mm-hmm. So one day a week, I gather up all my gin bottles and I take the shit to Red Bank. What was I talking about? Just going outside and just, I don't remember what I was talking about. I lost my train of thought. I think I had a TIA.
Okay, back it up. We were talking about the screenplays, and like then you were saying something about him. I don't know, girl. I lost it too.
Oh my God! But the whole, I think maybe I was talking about just in the generalness of it all, maybe.
I was listening
to the podcast because I've listened to the read. The only time I basically listen to other podcasts is when I'm in my truck, and I'm only in my truck like every week, once a week or every 2 weeks. And they were talking about, what were you saying again? Follow that up.
I don't know.
Oh, what were they talking about on the read?
In relationship to, because I did listen to the latest episode, so I don't know. Were they talking about the Sister Act remake?
They were talking about the Sister Act remake, and they didn't get to the read. They talked about the Bronco busting 12-year-old from Maryland.
Yes.
But there was more than that. What was right after that? There was something like right after that that I thought connected to what we were just talking about. Oh, I don't know. It'll come back to me, I'm sure, if it was important. Mm-hmm. However.
wait, but I wanted to add this also. It's just that, how old is Stephen King now?
Stephen like, King 60, is 70? In his 60s, almost 70.
Yeah, so it's just like, how much personal time and energy is he really contributing to a lot of these remake projects that are coming out, you know?
The remake, The Shining, maybe that's what I was going to lead into. The only King book that basically followed and was an amazing book, or that they really did not need to even consider remaking, was The Shining. Red Rum, Jack Nicholson, how dare you even consider remaking that? So why did they have to remake The Shining?
The Shining?
Yes.
I know, so speaking of The Shining, I did enjoy that sequel, Dr. Sleep. What sequel? I didn't see the movie though. So there was a sequel to The Shining called Dr. Sleep, and it was like Jack Torrance, is that the kid's name? Jack or whatever, you know, like the little boy from The Shining, that he's grown up. And so he has this job where he goes to like senior homes, and then he sits with them as they like take their last breath type of thing. But then there's like this evil force that's like kind of taking like life force, like forces of innocence. It's kind of like Sleepwalkers a little bit. But yeah, so Dr. Sleep, check it out. It's the sequel to The Shining, like years later.
They didn't need
well, not the movie. I'm just saying, either. Read the book. I'm just saying, read the book, girl.
The Shining is the bomb by itself. It still frightens me. Unlike
I'm not saying.
Unlike Firestarter, they don't need to mess with that.
No, I enjoyed the original Firestarter. Drew Barrymore was the bomb.
Have you watched her show? I have not watched her daytime show.
I haven't. You know, I miss a lot of stuff unless it gets recommended to me by people I trust.
I saw they debuted it because her and Gayle King were talking about it on CBS Morning News, and she had a really pretty yellow dress on, but I'm not fitting to watch her or the Kelly Clarkson. I don't need to watch either one of their shows.
Oh, I like Kelly Clarkson.
I just want to see if she's going to bust out and sing. You need to text me if you watching her show and she just busting out and singing. But I don't need to watch her show, though. She just need to keep to the singing thing.
Oh, stop. Oh, don't shut up and dribble, Kelly Clarkson.
All right. So, let's see. We talked about, did we actually hit on all of the characters that they talked about that were they presented in this whacked first episode? Oh, but back up. What do you think of the significance of the cornfields and Hemmingford home? And does it make sense? Because you know the cornfields don't exist in Colorado, right?
Yeah, no, I think that was just a way, I feel like, they wanted to cut out. So it's just like, okay, instead of going to Nebraska and then whoever was in Nebraska had moved to Colorado, they just cut out Nebraska altogether and just had people going directly to Boulder. Because originally Hemmingford home was in Nebraska, which makes the cornfields make sense. I think that when they were cutting that out, maybe someone didn't consider like, oh, well, if we're going to cut out Nebraska, maybe we should change the cornfields to like mountains or something. But then also I think that because the cornfields were such a prevalent part of the dreams, like in the book, that I don't know if that's why they left them in, but I feel like they're not really relevant to the new location, but because they were so relevant in the book, I'm assuming that's why they left them out. Or I don't even know. I mean, clearly it feels like there are some plot holes that don't have to be there based on the way the book was written.
And let's go back, and I'm just keep going back to the fact, if they had even just stuck to the original storyline and made those changes, they didn't have to add or subtract anything because they had at their disposal a book that was so rich in detail and would allow itself to change up some of this shit that they didn't have to add any of this shit. You could do a flashback, have Nebraska, and still make it make sense for people that are true Stephen King stans. They didn't have to change up shit. They didn't have to just skip over Nebraska. They didn't, because the cornfields to me, and this is me as a person, and again, they underestimate the type of people that really would read and look at this shit. Mm-hmm. I worked in Nebraska because I got a medical license. It expired and I didn't renew it. And I also got a medical license. I've practiced also in Colorado. Mm-hmm. So that cornfield and that is not Colorado. And how dare you? Definitely is never not anywhere near Boulder. You mean you got rolling cornfields outside of Coors up near the Nogger?
Well, you know what? We'll have to see, because maybe when we get more of Mother Abigail's backstory, hopefully in the next episode.
So they'll do the flashbacks.
Maybe they'll tie in
of her in the
relevant.
All right. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So, because maybe they'll be like, oh, she's in Colorado, but maybe the cornfield like represents her childhood or where she grew up or whatever. So maybe they'll tie it back.
I think you've given all of these money from white folks a whole bunch of leverage because they don't give, because they don't not, they're not, they're, see, that's also killing me. They don't think that there are people like us talking about this with sticky notes and notes, notebooks of the fallacy and just what, how this was a complete train wreck of it all. We don't even get paid for this, and we know this is bullshit. And then
but you know, also, we've read it. So I wonder also if this movie is not, what is it that, what is the, that, Stephen King writes, dear dedicated reader or something reader. Remember how he writes to the readers at the beginning? So I don't think that this movie is for the readers, you know?
So who the hell, who is this for then?
It's for people that never don't know nothing about The Stand, that maybe that just want to watch an apocalyptic movie series, you know? Like we can't be kind of single-sided in how we think about things too, because like our viewpoint, just because we're readers, it's just like we're probably in the minority, you know?
So you mean to tell me this movie is not for a Stephen King reader stan? This is for a whole new generation, how you gonna rope them in? Okay. Let me think about this. Okay.
Does that help? Like the
why?
Like
no, the it didn't. If you're kidding. Why fragility was not for the average black person or the woke black person, from what I was told. But if I could try to wrap my mind around if this was a primer. Okay, so you're basically saying that this movie is a primer for a whole bunch of hundreds of thousands or hundreds of millions of people that have never read Stephen King and have never read, at least up until this point, haven't seen any of his movies, haven't read any of his books. These are some really not reading dumb fucks. Is that what you say?
Okay, that's not, like, clearly I didn't say anything like what you just said. So this is what I think. I think that the people, I think possibly the people that are the funders of this movie have an idea about like the type of audience that they feel like makes money. And I feel like they're tailoring it to that audience. And that's not specifically a reading type of audience. So, and not to like dumb down, like, you know, not to, but I feel like the viewpoint,
they are appealing to the people that are very much more visual and the they're masses. Trying to pander or cater to them, because the true Stephen King fans and stans, we pissed the fuck off at this movie. It is whacked as hell. But you're saying, basically Sam, this is not to that type of person. This is to the people, the novice.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily, because I didn't think it was all that scary. This is not to even the B grade horror movie, a whole generation of people that have never even touched a Stephen King book. So if you are that person, if you are that novice, would you be impressed by this shit or would you be confused as hell?
Well, I think there's middle ground, right? Like there's some people that are like us, like just pretty much have read majority of the Stephen King catalog. And there's some people that are, you know, maybe just like familiar with Stephen King movies or like familiar with like the genre of Stephen King, which I feel like is not even necessarily like completely horror scary. Cause then it's like, you know, you got like Dolores Claiborne and you got like just different types of, you know, like thriller type of books.
Oh my God. You bring up Dolores. That's another movie I'm gonna have to put on a rotation. That movie was
Kathy Bates.
I love Kathy Bates. That was another Misery movie too. That followed the book.
Misery was good too, even though it was a little bit different, but it was good.
Oh my God. I'm getting madder and madder. So.
Oh, are you getting Rose madder?
Jesus, what? many good books. So let's stop it. Stop it. Because you keep telling me stuff and it's making me madder.
I only got a little bit more time too, because then I'm supposed to work out with Mary. So I got like maybe 5-10 more minutes.
Okay, so and that brings us to a very good stopping point. Who is this fucking movie or this limited series made for? Because it's obviously not made for me. The more I talk to you, the more I know that. And they knew it was gonna piss us all off, but they didn't really care.
Nah, you know what? I think I'm gonna reserve. So you know my initial feelings clearly, but I'm gonna reserve a little bit more judgment because there are 9 more episodes. So maybe they're starting off slow, and then also because we've only met a fraction of the primary characters. So I mean, we'll see how the other characters are, because even I feel like these characters that they've introduced, even no shade to any of the actors or the actresses, but of course excluding Whoopi, but I feel like I wasn't really impressed with anybody's performances yet.
So, and that's where we're gonna leave this, because I'm also annoyed that I know it's if they think this is not a movie for me, but the only reason I'm going to come back is to see how they're going to portray the Nick Andros's character, the Underwood character, and Whoopi. Mm-hmm. That's all I need. I'm going to need to know those main characters. And the greasy devil character, the one that is...
Randall Flat RF.
Exactly. So that's the only reason I'm going to come back. Now that I can rest assured that, okay, y'all don't want this for me, but the only reason, but you're using me to get up your Nielsen ratings, because you know I'm going to come back, because I need to find out how y'all portray those characters that I know y'all didn't put in the first whack ass pilot rep episode. That's the only reason why I'm going to tune in to Thursday. Next, wait a minute, that's Christmas Eve. It's supposed they're going to drop another one?
Well, it's supposed to be every Thursday. I don't know if they're skipping because of Christmas Eve, but also since it is CBS All Access, it's not people can watch it anytime.
Anytime. But they know I'm going to be watching that next Christmas Eve as I am making my crab legs. See, that's also pissing me off. Because if I tune in, because I know they have wrapped production by the time it drops, they already ordered the 10 episodes. Those 10 episodes have already been shot the beginning of the year. I'm mad because y'all know I'm gonna come back because I need to see how y'all gonna portray those other characters. And Carol, I'm still really annoyed about how it's gonna progress with the Harold character. I hate them, but I'm gonna watch it anyways, because number one, it gives me the opportunity to holler at you, but also number two, it also gives me opportunity to fuss and cuss at Liberal. There you go.
Yeah, and I like watching my mom, because then I'd be like, see, now in the book, this is what happened.
And I got sticky notes, girl. It is literally like the Bible. I got highlights, I had sticky notes. What is this? So I'm mad. I'm already mad, but I'm looking forward to basically talking to you. Now, are we going? I know I get paid earlier, but are we going to just kind of do the weekend thing again, since I now know that I have to be on Zoom in order to record this appropriately? You can actually, because you access this from your phone, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. So let's just circle back, because I'm going to have to watch the 1994 version. And I don't know, girl, maybe I shouldn't, because every time I get other extraneous information, it just makes me mad. But I'm going to have to watch the 1994 version.
Watch it, because I'm going to rewatch it before this next episode drops too, because the thing is that I felt like it was kind of weak, but watching this one, it makes me appreciate the 1994 one better. And I feel like their cast was a lot better. Like, you know, Gary Sinise played Stu Redmond. Molly Ringwald was Franny. You know, I already mentioned Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis. And, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's Rob Lowe as Nick Andros. So I feel like even their cast was a lot, like, it seems like it had a higher budget, but I guess like it's relative to 1994, right?
And let's start right there. Let's, when the next time we talk, because I'm going to talk to you about other stuff before Christmas. Mm-hmm. Christmas is next week. Let's make sure I am going to watch the USA version. And where did mm-hmm. you say I can actually, it's not on Prime. Where can I get that again?
So you can purchase it for $4.99 on Vudu. You can, I think, of course, they have like a Blu-ray set where you can purchase like the DVDs. And then also you can watch like a lower quality, like on YouTube. But that's if they did. Yeah, I don't know if they have the rights to that. So hopefully that's still there. But I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know when this drops, but watch it before then in case they take it off.
Okay, so that's what we're going to pick up next week. We're going to basically make comparisons. We got to watch the second episode of mm-hmm. this next week, as well as make sure we watch the 1994 version. And mm-hmm. I'm going to stop recording now. And that's how I'm going to leave Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy. I hope you will join me as I continue to post my 12 podcasts of Christmas. I may just get all of them in. I may have to do a couple of doubles, but I think I'll be able to do it. This episode was just a lot of fun to produce because I had the opportunity to hang out with my cousin online or on the phone, as well as watch a whole bunch of great content. I hope you will join me next week as I recap Star Trek Discovery, the 11th episode, as well as episode 2 of The Stand. Don't hesitate to navigate to chatterbooks.com, my online bookstore, and look for books that you want to add to your stash, as well as give to the avid readers in your family. And there's still several million people that need a bag of gummy penises. Navigate to shipabagofdicks.com /tenfrogotjokes. You can either use my promo code tenfrogotjokes to get 10% off, but I would suggest using the promo code MaryDick to get up 20-25% off of your order, as well as shipping. And again, I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating it. And if I don't talk to you, or if you don't listen to my podcast before the end of this week, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And thank you for listening.
Business day.